As a psychologist, I've talked to many people with OCD about their experiences. The idea that OCD is only about hand washing and organization is a misconception. OCD is a severe and very common condition. OCD can latch onto anything, but it often focuses on the things we care about most. In an attempt to make the distress from their unwanted thoughts go away, people with OCD will often engage in repetitive physical or mental behaviors known as compulsions, which can be incredibly time-consuming and exhausting. Yet OCD is highly treatable, but it needs specialized treatment. NoCD is a virtual therapy provider for OCD that makes getting specialized therapy easier than ever. With NoCD, you can do live, face-to-face video therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in OCD. Therapists receive in-depth specialized training in exposure and response prevention, or ERP, a type of therapy that was designed specifically to treat OCD. NoCD accepts many major insurance plans and offers always-on support between sessions. If you think you might be struggling with OCD and want to learn more about therapy with NoCD, go to NoCD.com and schedule a free 15-minute call with their team. That's NoCD.com to learn more and book a free 15-minute call. This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work.
No, not their problems did not go away, but they were awakened to them. They realized that there's things to work on, and then they started working on those things. So nothing out there is going to take away, you know, it's not meant to do that. We don't come in this world for all our problems to be just taken away from a drug or from a psychedelic experience, from anything. We're here to work on ourselves.
Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Sadly, the news of Matthew Perry's autopsy report broke recently and revealed the absolute unethical behavior of the doctors responsible for prescribing ketamine for him. As the story evolves, I wanted to share on Self-Work what the safe psychedelic use of ketamine actually is, because I've had patients use it and it has been incredibly helpful. So, we're going to ask Dr. Stephen Radowitz. He's become the nation's leading ketamine therapy doctor, having administered more than 8,000 journeys, as they call them, to 1,500 members over the past 2 years. Before that, he worked at St. Vincent's New York City Midtown Medical Center, where he was medical director of the Inpatient Alcohol and Opiate Detox and Treatment Unit. He's also given me a very personal interview. He talks about his own anxiety and how his experience with ketamine has led him to really believe that it is a huge benefit to patients who suffered with both depression and anxiety, and it's really not been able to be helped in any other way. Before we get to the interview, we're going to hear from AG1 and some recent and really exciting news about AG1 and gut health. When AG1 first approached me about sponsoring Self-Work, I of course had to try it. I not only loved it because I could tell an improvement in my overall energy level, I could tell a difference in how my body felt. How even with my busy schedule, I could count on my body doing what it was supposed to do every day. And now there are studies being published showing that what I've been feeling is backed up by science. In one study, 97% of participants felt digestion improved after 90 days of drinking AG1. And in another, the actual composition of the microbes in your gut changed for the better. Add that to the fact that AG1 is in powder form, so it's easier for your body to digest. What good is a supplement if your body can't absorb and use it? So start with AG1 and notice the difference for yourself. It's a great first step to investing in your health, and that's why they've been a proud partner of mine for so long. Try AG1 and get a free bottle of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's a $48 value for free if you go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. And now, Here's Dr. Stephen Radowitz. Well, I have been wanting to have someone on self-work to cover this topic because I will admit to you that I have certainly referred people for ketamine. I've referred people for TMS. But I really want to learn more about it, and I want self-work listeners to learn about it because I just think there's a lot of misconception.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. And you run the, am I saying it correctly? Nushama.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Nushama. Yeah. And so I've been running this. We've been here for a little over 3 years.
Okay.
And it's been, you know, I'm an internist, actually. I'm not a psychiatrist.
Oh, okay.
Purpose. So I started on, but I did a lot of psychiatry. You know, I'm just a primary care. I've worked as a primary care doctor for many, many years.
That's the best kind, I think.
Yeah. And you get to know people. So it wasn't just like handing out drugs. Like I started to stop sending my patients to psychiatrists. I found people were getting overdiagnosed mm-hmm. with things and overtreated. And they'd come back to me with like five different medications and sort of numbed out. Like I didn't have access to them. You see in their eyes, they started. Really, the drug company started marketing these antipsychotics like Abilify and all these certain type of, you know, that. And those, you know, were initially, you know, were approved for psychosis, you know. And they started, you know, saw that it helped with bipolar disease and mania and stuff. And then they started using it for just plain depression. So they weren't depressed, yeah. But they were happy. They were feeling nothing.
I agree with you. I do, of course, occasionally say I think maybe some medication would be helpful, but that's not my go-to at all. So I am fascinated by your work. How long have you been working in the psychedelic field?
So about, I guess it's about 3.5 years now.
Okay.
And then some personal experience through medical. Like I had some of my patients use it actually for medical reasons, like really severe headaches. Mm-hmm. That was related, they didn't know, was related to some, you know, childhood trauma and issues, and went on this psychedelic, you know, sort of underground, using MDMA and psilocybin, and was found in their first journey, like all the headaches that they'd been suffering, they had sinus surgery, they had acupuncture, they were on medications, they did everything, nothing worked. And one psychedelic journey, like just everything went away, you know, after many years. So I saw the power in that, and you know, it's not only medically, and then also people used it for emotional issues, and you know. And
I must admit, when I hear everything went away, I get a little suspicious.
Yeah. No. Not everything, not their mental health issues, but their headaches were actually their headaches. So they stopped suffering from these daily chronic sort of entrenched tension headaches. No, not their problems did not go away, you know, but they were awakened to them. They realized that there's things to work on. Then they started working on those things. So yeah, right. No, nothing out there is going to take away, you know, it's not meant to do that. We don't come in this world for all our problems to be just taken away from a drug or from a psychedelic experience, from anything. We're here to work on ourselves. So in that process, the nice thing about psychedelics is it is, it's a working it's a process. It's not a drug that takes things away. It's a drug to help awaken us, not suppress, but enhance and allow us to go to those places that we were scared to go to and to allow us to see it with a greater openness.
So know? I want to get to some basics.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to talk about ketamine versus MDMA, which people might know as ecstasy, and right. then psilocybin. Right. And then the second thing, and you might want to do this concurrently, is that I want you to talk about the what's happening in our brains when we do this. And, you know, they've been touting now for a while that we're learning so much about how the opioid receptors in the brain right. are affected by depression.
I can explain that as much as we know. You know, in any mostly psychiatric medications, even like simple things like sleeping pills, you know, like Ambien, we don't really exactly know how they work completely. Mm-hmm. None of them. We have ideas, but when it comes to the mind, the brain, you know, we know, but there's also for everything we know, we don't, there's a lot we don't know. Yeah. So, you know, you have to use these things with caution. all of them, you know, including ketamine, has to be used with responsibility and you know, and a bit of reverence, you know, and so, but we do have a lot of information, and, you know, especially the ketamine is a very, it affects many different neurotransmitters, one of them being the opiate receptors, and affects them different from a lot of the, you know, the opiates that we use, like morphine and all the other drugs, and even heroin. You know, there's different opiate receptors, and each substance that affects those opiate receptors has different ability to bind onto them, so which makes it less or more addictive. So ketamine affects in lower doses, it has some effect on the opiate receptors, which gives you this sort of this almost like a heart opening, more empathetic or empathic experience. But as we escalate the dose into, you know, higher, more sub-anesthetic, but more psychedelic dosing, other neurotransmitters come into line, into play, where, you know, like the serotonin receptors, which cause some, have a lot of overlap with some of the other psychedelics like psilocybin. The lower doses, and it affects also estrogen receptors in the brain, which we know are involved in mood. And we see it, especially in women, we see some of these effects. Women are a little bit have a better, men respond very well, women a little bit better to some of these treatments.
Really? And, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we're all have heard the details now of the death of Matthew Perry and how, you know, he tragically died and he was on these massive amounts of ketamine. And now the people that are involved in giving him that are being prosecuted. So I'm, you know, that's in the back of my mind as I listen. So, but I still, can you say very basically what each of these is?
Yeah. Like I can go over to what they, how they affect it. I can, do you want me to talk about like how it works in the brain, or I can give a very general idea of, you know, of how these substances, and they all have a lot of overlap, how they can possibly work. And they work by decoupling our memories from our emotions. You know, our brain works patterns. There is a little bit of a more of a spiritual, like it's not religious, but you know, you get, have access to different points of view, you know, and our religions, you know, came in to help us accept or see the world, not just from a physical standpoint, but from a more open standpoint. And that's where, you know, spirituality, whatever people's spirituality and however they go, whatever path they take, allows us to have a new perspective, a more open perspective to the things that happen, the world around us. And hopefully, usually it's for the better, you know, and sometimes the psychedelics do help in that respect. It allows us to have a different perspective in how we see things, how we see certain events in our life that get imprinted in this brain. And I see the brain, you know, that's where I'm going to get. So I'm not going to get too deep into that, but I will mention that because it is a big part of this type of work.
Okay. So ketamine is blank.
Ketamine, you know, ketamine is a substance that helps us, you know, it helps us, it allows for a neuroplastic process, allows the brain to work in a little bit more free flow and open up and change the way we change some of our more entrenched ideas of how we see the world. Okay. And often how it gets programmed, this brain, I call it like sort of an AI computer, very sophisticated computer that's works in patterning, and it gets programmed throughout our life to determine and helps us determine, you know, what's safe and what's not. And its main purpose in this world is to make sure we survive. So simple things like you go and you, as a child, you go and you run into a table, you hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. So that meant the memory of you running into the table gets imprinted in the memory section of our brain. The emotions associated with the pain you felt gets imprinted into the emotional part of our brain, and it gets wired through these default mode networks, these wire networks, and connects the memory to the emotion. So next time you see the table, your brain will
slow down a little bit.
Slow down. It triggers the fear, gets me to stop running into the table, which makes sense. But other more traumatic, more difficult situations in life, like a broken home, some, you know, parents fighting in the house. As children, we need for our survival, we need our parents for our survival. We need a grown-up. We don't survive without them. And so, you know, so when we don't feel like our parents, who are the main source of that, you know, that safety, are there for our safety, that gets imprinted in here as unsafety in the bottom, and we start to wall ourselves up, and we start to see the world through that unsafe lens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what the ketamine tries to do is opens up those wiring, the connections between those past memories of a child and the emotions. So again, I can talk about the different ways you can get it. It's either done through an infusion, an IV infusion slow. And the nice thing about the infusion is we can stop it if someone's having a difficult experience or whatnot. We stop it. It's a very short acting drug and it comes out of your system within minutes. Okay. Or you come back to yourself within minutes. There's intramuscular, so it's a shot in the arm, mm-hmm. And that also maybe lasts a little shorter. It tends to the onset of action's faster, and it might last a little shorter than that. But it's just another way people who don't like having IVs in, or certain practitioners just don't have someone to put in an IV. That's another way of getting it. And then there's lozenges. Some psychologists are using lozenges to use. It's a little bit of a lower dose. A different type of experience. It's not as deep. It's not as psychedelic, and can be used in conjunction with psychotherapy or not sometimes. Okay. And that also is
used. I'm confused. So I'm a PhD, but I could give someone one of these.
So the way it works, there are some companies now that offer these things where they'll have a psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse practitioner do an intake and then prescribe the medicine. And technically, there's actually there's a few companies now that are selling and people are doing it by themselves in their homes. Mm-hmm. I have an issue with that. Mm-hmm. People are taking this on a regular, maybe once or twice a week, and they're having experiences by themselves at home, and they can sign in or call in and have a virtual integration session before and after. But it's done at home. And I think there's too much risk in that. Yeah. And I think the lower doses, it can be a little bit more euphoric and could be more addictive. In higher doses, when you go into the higher doses, is a little bit more on the psychedelic end of things, deeper experience, and definitely not addictive in that way. And then it's not,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's not necessarily an enjoyable experience. It's work. When people come into our treatments, you're doing work. You're going and, you know, what you experience is, you know, otherworldly in certain ways. It's allowing you to see things and see reality from a different perspective. And then, you know, when it's over, most of what happens or what comes up in the experience goes away. You don't remember it. And a lot of it's actually is predicated by the music we listen to. So I can go through the process actually of how, like, what does it look like when someone comes to our CR program? They come in, you know, they have a medical and psychiatric evaluation, which is about an hour with myself or with psychiatric nurse practitioners. We make sure it's a safe option, a good option. We go through the program, answer questions. And if they're cleared for the treatment, and there's certain indications for treatment, usually treatment-resistant mood disorders like depression, anxiety, PTSD. We also work with eating disorders. Addiction is a very big thing, very, very helpful for addiction. So they'll come in and for their treatments. There's six treatments, two infusions a week over a three-week period. When they come in, they're meeting with a nurse. The nurse does a full nursing assessment, checks their vitals, blood pressure, and all that. We always discuss the dose before. So we get permission from our members to give the medicine. And we start
but
off
now. If you don't really know what it is and you've never had it, I mean, it would be like, how much am I supposed to have? I don't know.
Yeah, no. We start off. We have a standard protocol, but you know, we want to make sure that people are involved in the process. So we start off usually at anywhere from 0.5 or 0.8 milligrams per kilogram. We dose by weight, and then we escalate each time they come in based on how they respond to the experience and how they're doing. So are they getting better? Then we will escalate the dose based on that. And that's where after the third or fourth, they do have our members who come in here have an input on what they think is right for them. And, you know, the experiences can be very otherworldly, very unusual. Mm-hmm. And you get used to like in this world, sometimes difficult things we go into a new situation. It's unusual. We feel uncomfortable. Over time, you start to get comfortable with being uncomfortable in these experiences. Mm-hmm, itself.
How do you make the distinction between, okay, you're a candidate for ketamine, you're a candidate for MDMA. Now, MDMA is not approved yet, right?
Right. So MDMA is not approved. And it was actually just the FDA. They went up for approval before the FDA and they rejected it. They had an issue with some of the design of some of the studies. So now they're asking that they go back and do additional studies. So it's going to be quite a bit of time before MDMA is going to be approved for clinical use in this country.
Okay. Okay.
Now, the only way you can use MDMA legally is in a study protocol.
In other countries, is it? Because I have international listeners, so.
Yeah. So so it is legal in other countries. Some of the Scandinavian countries, it is legal. It might be in certain South American countries, but most countries right now, yeah, it's not legal.
And is psilocybin legal?
Psilocybin is also not legal in this country. Federally, it is legal in certain cities. Actually, in Oregon. In Portland,
they allow
it. But it's still on a federal level. You know, the doctor is still technically legally not allowed. It's, mm-hmm. But could have other uses. And the difference, you know, MDMA is technically not a psychedelic. It's considered an empathogen. So, and an empathogen is just opening up, making people more, a little bit more open to seeing the good, you know, to seeing mm-hmm. things from a more loving perspective and more open perspective. Very good for couples as well. It's been used, I think, in Germany for years. For couples therapy has been incredibly effective for that. So MDMA does, hopefully in the future, we'll have that available as a treatment option. Psilocybin also is not legal here. Also in undergoing a lot of studies, and I think it also has a space. The only problem with those is it's very long, you know, and they're both from beginning to end. It's a good, you know, 8 hours from the time they come in to the time they leave. It could be anywhere from 5 to 8 hours of treatment, where ketamine is, from start to finish is about 3 hours.
So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. So for anyone who has done ecstasy or mushrooms or whatever, shrooms, I guess, what people...
Yeah.
How would the experience be different in your office than it was if they used them recreationally?
So, you know, I think with any psychedelic, we always talk about set and setting. It's very important to have the environment with which you're doing it. When you're taking these medicines, number one, you're opening yourself up to different ways of seeing the world, different perspectives, changes your perspective. So if you're in a situation where you don't feel safe, you know, opening you up and you're, it can actually make it worse. It can make your situation, it can make your mood disorders worse.
Right.
And we hear this all the time. People have bad trips. If you're in a clinical setting, like where we do, you know, we do it in a very controlled setting where you have nurses and doctors and you have an eye mask, earphones, you're listening to music. It's a very controlled setting and it's a safe setting. So even if something difficult comes up during the experience, we're there, we have therapists, and you know, we're here to help people reframe that experience. And often those difficult experiences are clinically the most effective, really help us work through. Because in life, you know, when we're out there, we have difficult experiences all the time. What this does is it helps us, what we talk about this neuroplastic process, but rewire or reframe difficult situations and allow us to see it with more openness and also process and move through it with greater ease. So in a more clinical setting, it's a safer place to do that. So it's not the same. It's a completely different experience when you do it in a more clinical setting.
So is there specific training for therapists to know how to do this kind of assistance in psychedelic work?
Yes. There's they started working on this MDMA approval through the MAPS program. So that is really stimulated. And then when ketamine came online as a treatment for mood disorders, a lot of training programs opened up. A lot of them are virtual. One, ketamine-assisted therapy is what we do in our clinic. We have a therapist that, you know, we use higher doses or more psychedelic dosing. And we do the treatment, the therapy, or the preparation before the treatment. They go into treatment, and then there's integration after. But while they're under the influence of the medicine, they're wearing an eye mask, earphones, and they go into the journey. It's really an inward dive into themselves. Okay. And just a letting go into the experience. So no one interferes during that experience. That's for an hour. In ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, they use the... Talk about those lozenges I mentioned before. They use lozenges, lower doses. It gets people into what's called a psycholytic dosing, or a little bit more openness, a little more heart opening. You can almost stimulate, almost like an MDMA, more empathetic.
That's very interesting. Now, I have talked to Dr. Shauna Springer, who is, she has written a book called Warrior, and she does a lot of work with PTSD and that kind of with the first responders or military. And she, I know she's very involved in these centers that do a stellate ganglion block.
Yes.
Is that a much more biological kind of treatment for PTSD?
Yeah, that's much more biologic. What it's doing is it's interfering with the, you know, the fight or flight, the sympathetic. So when someone's in, you know, and a lot of us live in this too much, but when we get triggered, our brain goes into the sort of fight or flight. It feels like this is an emergency situation, and it starts to work in ways that are not, that are more efficient, but not, we feel we don't have control. So our heart rate goes up, our blood pressure goes up, and it almost feeds itself. So when we're stressed, you know, go into a panic attack sort of itself, it just keeps on going.
Yeah.
So it tries to block that. It blocks some of the effects of that sympathetic overactivation. People don't, they might feel anxious, but they might have an anxious or get triggered into anxiety, but it doesn't, they don't feel it physically. We do this actually sometimes also with taking people take beta blockers.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they use that also. It's a similar type of idea. But this is injecting into the ganglions, and it helps people deal specifically with anxiety, general anxiety disorder, PTSD. So they're less triggered, or if they even are triggered, they don't, it just doesn't translate into an effect on the body.
So what I'm wondering here, because I know how territorial people can be, have you gotten pushback from psychiatrists about your work?
Yeah, some people don't like the fact that we're doing this. You know, it's just a very different model. You know, psychiatry,
much more holistic.
Doctor, it's much more holistic what I'm doing. It's about going to the problem, and also it's about giving the individual the agency to find the answer in themselves. That's how I see it. So I think a lot of what we call, like, general anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, they're not really biologic diseases, or this whole idea of having a chemical imbalance in the brain.
Oh, that's horrible
nonsense. I mean, that's completely been debunked by science, but people still really believe it. And it was actually used as a marketing tool to sell our drugs, because we have a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. If I have a disorder or an imbalance of my serotonin, this is going to rebalance my serotonin levels.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work that way. It's
like
such
putting
a
simple, fuel in your car.
Not at all. It's a wiring issue. You know, there's a wiring, there's neurotransmitters with serotonin receptor. You know, obviously there's issues in the wiring and the patterning in the brain, which I mentioned before. And that's the main issue. And we can, like, you don't need to do a chemical to actually rewire the brain either. I mean, people rewire the brain with many things. I mean, the idea of going through therapy is a way of reframing things. And when we start to really believe it, that also
rewiring.
A rewiring or a neuroplastic process. People do it through faith. People become more spiritual and read spiritual novels and allow them to see the world with greater openness and ease. And that also helps people with different mood disorders, it's very varied. So this whole biologic model, I think a lot of psychiatrists, as they see it, these are symptoms that need to be suppressed. And often what we see is that 70 or 80% of people on these medications, the medications stop working over time. So they start adding more and more and more. And the problem is, you know, we're not dealing with the issues. So the issues persist. We're just sort of numb to them. And we're not making the changes we need to make in our lives in order to go. And I see our emotions as little chemical, as little messengers, you know, let us know that when we're out of alignment, much like pain. So God forbid someone breaks a bone and there's pain. The pain's not a disease. The pain's a messenger letting you know, hey, there's bone out of alignment.
I've read also that your brain really doesn't know the difference between emotional pain and physical pain.
Doesn't. That's the thing. They're both from the same idea. When life is taking us out of alignment from where we want to go, much like the bone is out of alignment, what do? We put on a cast, and with time and patience, the bone heals and the pain is no longer necessary and it goes away. Mm-hmm. Instead, what we do is we load people up with morphine and call the pain a disease and walking on a crooked leg and it never gets better.
Right. One last question. How would you compare this with TMS? Which is transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Magnetic stimulation, yes. I mean, it's very, it's a sort of a, it's less of a, it's not an experience. So it's not an emotional or physical experience. It's seeing the brain is also, it's a type of a way of rewiring or inducing a neuroplastic process in the brain. It works for some, but often temporarily. Like you have to keep on going back for it. Sometimes it's not so pleasant for most people. What I like about the work I'm doing is that people are involved in the process. You feel like when you're going in there, it's not something that's being happening to you. Yeah. You're part of it.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I'm just handing you that. So I find with TMS, much like all the other psychiatric medications, it's just something that's sort of, it's something that's just being done to you. And that's what's making me better. Where you're in it, when you're in these psychedelic experiences, it's not easy. People have to be prepared. It's not an easy experience. It is a bit of a journey, but you feel like you're doing the work. And I think there's something that to be said about that. And people feel part of it and they feel like they've accomplished something afterwards. And I always congratulate them after they finish their treatment. I mean, I think that's the whole thing is sort of decoupling. What we mentioned before is decoupling. It doesn't take away your emotion. It doesn't take away your memories. It doesn't take away the emotions. It just decouples them. So things, that would normally trigger me right now, like something that happened to me as a 5-year-old child. I mean, as a 5-year-old child, it was a risk to my life maybe, but now I'm safe. I'm in my 50s. I'm in a safe place. That same event that happened to me at 5 years old is no longer a risk. So I don't need that connection to that memory anymore, that emotion based on that. I can decouple. I can say I'm safe now. And it's telling your brain, where I am right now, I'm safe, and it allows us to be more present in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to see things that would normally trigger me don't do so intently. So I can actually choose the situation I saw is so terrible right now. It's actually not bad. And I have a little bit of time to a little bit of buffer to decide how I want to see, how I choose to see this situation, not based on what happened to me or what someone said to me when I was a young child, but where I am today and how I want to respond to it, not react from a place of unsafety.
Thank you so much for this information, because I really think it's very clear and you obviously know what you're talking about. And just anything that I did not ask you that you think it's important
we touched it a little bit about the safety of these things. And, and it is a very, when you use in a clinical setting, in a responsible way, it is an unusually safe medication. Mm-hmm. We've seen over 10,000 infusions here. I mean, it really is safe. What happened with Matthew Perry was just absolutely ridiculously irresponsible and horrible. No one should be doing ketamine. I don't think he died from ketamine. I think he died from likely from drowning. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't be doing ketamine or any drug, even drinking alcohol in a hot tub or in a pool, alone or whatever you want to. You have to be responsible with everything. I think anything in life, it's about your set and setting and how you determine to use it and to use it with responsibility.
Well, thank you so much for taking your time to talk to Self-Work listeners and to me. I certainly feel much more educated about this. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I hope that was informative to you. I especially want to thank several of you who've left really wonderful reviews on Apple Podcasts for Self-Work. One says, Margaret has so many insights and the ability to convey complex mental health issues in a way that's easy to understand. That really made me feel good. Someone else says, I came across this podcast and it's been a blessing. She's soothing while also providing useful and actionable information. The length of the episodes is perfect and accessible for even the busiest individual. Thank you so much for those reviews, Lucy and Kay Demo. I don't know how to say that any other way. I really, really appreciate it. So please, any of the rest of you, leave a rating, a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It helps people realize that Self-Work is fresh and informative. And even though we're 400 and something episodes in, there's still a lot to learn. And believe me, I learn along with you. You can also subscribe at drmargaretrutherford.com and you will receive a free ebook. And it's new. And it's a short little ebook. It gives you some exercises to do to try to look and see how you cover up yourself. What are your defensive mechanisms? It's kind of helpful to understand yourself in that way. But you'll also get a weekly newsletter with this podcast included and my weekly blog post, as well as anything else that I think might be interesting for you. Again, it's a weekly newsletter. That's it. And it's a very easy way to keep up with self-work. And of course, share with your friends. You're my best marketing agent. Believe me, all of you are. I appreciate you being here and anybody else that you would say, hey, I listen to this. It's really helpful to me. Thank you again for being here. My real gratitude to you, to any of you who have loved ones or you yourself have been in Florida or North Carolina or Georgia or any of the states totally devastated by the recent hurricanes. Please know that we're thinking about you. All of you give what you can to the Red Cross or whatever organization you believe in. This is a time to help one another. Take care of yourself, your friends, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.